to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It is Wednesday, February 10th, 2010, hump day, middle of the week, starting that long slide down to another Powhana Friday and another wild weekend. But I got to tell you, things that just get, you just get up every morning and you think it couldn't get any weirder than it was yesterday, and then it proceeds to do so. We're going to be getting into it right now. Our phone lines are open, 866-582-9933, 866-582-9933. Othman's in the control room, ready to answer your phone calls and put you right on the air with me. The chat rooms are open, the webcam is running, and we're just ready to rock and roll. Now, I'm looking at the corporate media feeds here. The snowfall that has hit the eastern seaboard, mid-Atlantic region, is setting records. This is the most snow these cities have seen since they started keeping track. And already we are seeing these spokes drones for Al Gore and Barack Obama and for the United Nations trying to fan out across the media to insist that just because it's cold and it's record-setting cold is no reason to doubt the holy writ of human-caused global warming. And, of course, the reason they're still out there standing with their hair on fire and insisting they cannot smell any smoke is because they want those carbon taxes. They need the money. And the United Nations is still pushing for global government. And this so-called global environmental crisis is one of the pillars on which they hope to rest a future push for a global government. But the bottom line here is that common sense, and, you know, it was interesting because we saw one of these spokes ladies on CNN, and I didn't catch her name, but she was out there just with this, you know, situation of the science of, you know, of climate change. It's established. It's absolutely settled. There is no question. And the moderator was saying, well, what about the leaked emails and all of these other science reports that say that we're really not sure about global warming anymore? And this other lady's just repeating the same thing. Oh, no, it is all settled. It is all settled. The exposure of the letters and software is completely meaningless. If the science is settled, the science is settled. And you can tell looking at her face. She knows it's bovine excrement that she's putting out there, but that's what she's paid to do, and she's going to go on doing it. But the bottom line here is that all climate is weather averaged over time. And if we're seeing this incredibly cold winter, there's a couple of things to derive from it. First of all, it does tell us the planet is getting colder, because this winter is colder than the last one, which is colder than the previous one. We are looking at the temperatures that are really happening in the real world. They don't match up with the hockey stick graph. They are wrong, they are wrong, they are wrong. And I wish to remind everybody that the British Met Office went public forecasting a very mild winter. So if these guys missed the call this badly for just 2, 3, 4 months into the future, then there's no way in heck that they can make an accurate prediction about what is going to be happening 10, 20, 100 years from now. It's just absolutely impossible. But they're still trying to sell this agenda because they want those carbon taxes. They need your money. And they feel that, frankly, they need them. Their need for your money is greater than your need for your money, so they're justified in continuing to put this hoax over on all of you. And you're going to have to stand up very forcefully and say, no, I don't believe you. You're lying to me, and you may not have my money and my obedience. Now, yesterday we were talking, and the day before, we were talking about Representative Mike Pence, and first of all, the revelation that, yes, indeed, he's exploring the possibility of running for president so that he must daven to Tel Aviv, and he came out with this comment that Israel should dictate U.S. policy, like it already doesn't. But the point is, it was a very bald-faced statement for him to make, to get up there and basically say that we should allow Israel to control the United States of America. And it was kind of a reckless statement there. And it was followed up today by Representative Michelle Bachmann, who apparently got up before a meeting of the Republican Jewish Coalition in Los Angeles and basically said that God will curse America if we oppose Israel. And I believe the direct quote is, I am convinced in my heart and in my mind that if the United States fails to stand with Israel, that is the end of the United States. Now, I want to point out something to everybody right now. The Bible says that Jesus had brothers and sisters. And I know a lot of the religion like to say, well, they're really cousins. The Bible says they're brothers and sisters, but they're really cousins. Okay? But without even getting into the question about whether Jesus and Mary Magdalene had a family, which is still a matter of some debate, we know that Mary was not an only child. She had brothers and sisters. Large families were the norm back then. John the Baptist was Jesus' cousin. So Jesus was part of an extended family, and that family had children, and those children had children, and those children had children, and so forth and so forth and so on. And the bottom line is, modern genetic research confirms the present-day Palestinians are direct descendants of the people who were living in the Holy Lands 2,000 years ago. So the mathematical odds are that a significant portion of them are blood relations to Jesus Christ. Distant blood relations, but still blood relations. Kinfolk. And Israel's killing them. They're in there again today, bombing the airport and shooting up farmers and things like that. And you are paying for it. Now, for those who believe in a heaven and a pearly gates and harps and wings and all the rest of this stuff, do you really think, having paid for the weapons that are being used to kill the distant blood relations of the boss's kid, do you think you're going to get into heaven with that? Probably not. Read your Old Testament. The big boss knows how to carry a grudge. And so the bottom line is, when Michelle Bachmann is standing up there and saying that God will curse America if it opposes Israel, this is absurd. Why would God curse America if they decided to refuse to go on supporting the killing of the boss's kid's blood relations? Now, we're basically dealing with competing mythologies here, but the bottom line is, for Michelle Bachmann to make such a statement, it is yet another indicator of the tremendous influence that Israel wields over our government and over our elected officials. And it is not something that can be allowed to stand, because our present economic plight, our present low standing in the world, all derives from being controlled and being sold out to by our own Congress, being sold out to the nation of Israel. In the testimony that Tony Blair just completed for the Chilkat inquiry in Great Britain, they basically admitted that Israel was consulted every step along the way to selling the war with Iraq to Great Britain and to the United States of America, which we have been telling you that ever since 2003. That Israel was behind the push for war with Iraq, just as we've documented they're behind the push for war with Iran. So our congresspeople, I want you to think about this for just a minute, our congresspeople are accepting huge campaign donations and the favors of Israel's control over our corporate media for their campaigns, in exchange for which they will sell, or at least rent, your young men and women in uniform into the military service to attack and kill people that Israel doesn't like. Now, to me, that's slavery, when the Congress can sell the services of your children, even to the point of being killed and crippled, into the services of a foreign country. That, to me, smacks of slavery, and that is something that we should never allow in the United States of America. So it's just another indicator of how completely out of control things are going. Another little story before we finish this segment. Gerald Posner has had to leave the Daily Beast over plagiarism allegations. And for those of you who have been paying attention, Gerald Posner's sole claim to fame is an endless series of books attacking and bashing anybody who questions the official story about anything the U.S. government has done, going all the way back to the John F. Kennedy administration. That is his job. He is a paid flack propagandist posing as an independent researcher, but all of his books always support the official story of whatever has happened. He's always cited as the definitive authority on why the people who question what the government is doing just have to be totally goofballs. And now he's been caught plagiarizing. He's having to leave his job. I think this illustrates the moral character of the man. All right, we're down here at the bottom of the segment. We're going to take a break for some commercials and pay some bills. Our phone lines are open, 866-582-9933, 866-582-9933, and we will be right back.
K Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means...
Which means they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 866-582-9933. 866-582-9933.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. I'm looking at the comments in the chat room, and people are very upset. We have these U.S. politicians who are always standing up and saying, Israel this and Israel that. There's a very wise saying that comes out of the Bible, and it is that no man can serve two masters. And this is certainly true. And this is certainly true. And so if you're looking at the political candidates going into the November elections, and by the way, the latest polls show that the Democrats are going to take a major beating because of the mismanagement of the last year. Going to the polls in November, I think the utmost issue should be, are these candidates going to be looking at America first, second, and third? And if they're not, if they're up there saying, I stand with Israel, well, then they're not taking care of the United States of America. We have a whole Congress full of politicians bought and paid for by AIPAC and other pro-Israel political action committees. And look at the job they're doing running this country. They're obviously not paying attention to what's going on in this country. Bernie Madoff ran for 12 years looting $65 billion from American investors, but the government was too busy worrying about Israel to be paying attention to what was going on in our economy. Which brings me to the next section of news here. The 10-year treasuries took a nosedive at the auction today. Nobody wants to buy them. Confidence in the American economy is plummeting right now. It absolutely is. The U.S. trade deficit widened to $40.2 billion in December. Now, they had been celebrating that the trade deficit seemed to be declining. Well, what that meant is that Americans didn't have the money to go to the stores and buy all kinds of goodies that are being imported from China and Japan and all these other countries. And so the trade deficit did narrow simply because, you know, we couldn't buy anything. It wasn't necessarily a good sign, but now it's increasing again. And what that means is every single day of the year, the United States of America is having to buy $1 billion worth of products, more than a billion, of products from outside to bring in. This includes food now. We're a net importer of food. $1 billion every day more than we are selling back out the opposite direction. And obviously this puts a tremendous amount of downward pressure on the value of the dollar. And despite this, we've known we've had a trade imbalance problem for a very, very long time. And yet the U.S. government still gave tax breaks to corporations to ship high-paying American jobs, manufacturing goods and services, products to other countries. We don't have anything left to sell. We're not growing enough food to be able to sell the surplus. When I was a kid, we were the breadbasket to the world. We sold surplus food to everybody, including Russia. We don't have that anymore. We're not making products that people want to buy. Personally, I'm beginning to wonder if all of this bashing of Toyota and Honda is an attempt to bolster American car sales. Because I don't remember the last time an American car recall got this kind of press coverage. But I digress. Back over in China, I guess they've talked enough and they're deciding they're really going to go ahead and do it. Chinese reserve managers have been notified by the government that any non-U.S. government guaranteed securities must be divested. In other words, any debt that they have bought, that China has bought from the United States, unless the U.S. government is guaranteeing it, which means shackling you and your future labor to it, they're going to start dumping. They're going to start dumping that debt to anybody else who will buy it. And they may even have to mark it down. Now, banks are facing a commercial property meltdown. We talked about this earlier in the year. When I said the housing crisis is not over, we're going to go into a double dip housing crisis, and we're going to start seeing the commercial property mortgages start to default. That is now starting to happen. Over in Great Britain, they're pointing out that roughly half of all the shopping malls, shopping centers, are now considered to be worth less than the amount of money they borrowed to be built in the first place. In other words, they're in negative equity. Now, Stan Humphries, the chief economist at the real estate site Zillow.com, is saying that the second dip in the double dip for the housing industry in the United States started in December, almost 2 months ago. So it's definitely, we're into another slump, a second slump. And the government is doing absolutely nothing to try and correct it, other than to loot the people and pour the money all over Wall Street and the banks. So what's happening to the rest of us out here in the real world? Well, Los Angeles is seriously looking at default and insolvency and bankruptcy. And public we're getting warnings from Fitch Ratings that any municipalities that even so much as mention the possibility of a Chapter 9 municipal bankruptcy, their credit worthiness will immediately be knocked down. Fitch is saying, don't even talk about it. Don't even think about it. You know, or we're going to have to mark you down. And that, of course, makes it more expensive for these municipalities to borrow monies to cover their shortfalls. Now, let's see. We've got Detroit schools, Pennsylvania's capital city of Harrisburg. They're all talking about bankruptcy. The money is getting really, really tight. Over in Nevada, the budget crisis is so severe that they're going to start rationing adult diapers given out through Medicaid. Sorry, you got to wear that thing 2 days instead of 1 day. They're not even going to provide gloves for caretakers anymore. Caretakers are going to have to buy their own disposable gloves. They're eliminating denture and hearing aid programs. It's all falling apart. Now, here in Hawaii, and this is something you probably ought to be looking at in your own local state, they're going to delay the tax refund checks for everybody who has sent in their tax return. And counting on a rapid refund check. It's not going to happen here in Hawaii. And I would venture to say we're going to see it happening in other states across the country. They simply don't have the money. Hawaii is unable to fund their current Quest health care plan for low-income families through the end of the year. They're saying they've got enough money to basically get through the third quarter. And after that, it's completely shot. Completely shot here. Now, they're already considering here in Hawaii raising the excise tax to try and cover the teacher furloughs issue. As we mentioned the other day, they're already talking about a major increase to employee taxes. And at the same time, they're cutting all the tax credits for companies that want to relocate to Hawaii and bring jobs here, which strikes me as being extraordinarily stupid. We have a company in Los Angeles that wants to build a $100 million film studio here on the island of Hawaii that could provide 1,600 jobs and an $80 million annual payroll. And they're asking for some tax credits to help fund the project. And the Hawaii legislature is saying, no, we're going to stand on principle. We want 100% of our tax rates on all income, which in this case will mean 100% tax rates on absolutely nothing. Because the increase in the employee taxes and the excise tax and the absence of any incentives is a deal killer for this Los Angeles company, for the companies that are already here right now. You know, there was a rumor about a De Laurentiis film coming over here. That will go away if there's, you know, if we don't have incentives. They're going to go to Australia. They're going to go to New Zealand. They're going to go anywhere but the United States of America. Our legislatures are just incredibly short-sighted. The only thing Hawaii seems to be looking at as a means of easing the tax burden on the people is they're legalizing gambling. They're going to authorize casinos on the native Hawaiian homelands and one casino here on the island of Oahu to try and bring the gambling addicts from Nevada back out to here. Good luck with that one. I have seen this before. It doesn't work. We'll be right back.
Listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're talking about the economy, and, I mean, everything's down. It's just grinding to a halt here. And I'm seeing all this talk about, you know, now, this far into the disaster, the White House is starting to talk about job creation. Of course, it's an election year, and that's what the voters want to hear about. They want to find out, you know, we don't want more loans, we don't want more handouts, we want to get back to work. We want to have jobs, and we want to have customers. That second one, that's the trick. I am concerned, especially because they're starting to portray the unemployment problem as racially biased. And yes, it is. But it's just another way to get the whites and blacks arguing with each other instead of uniting and dealing with the real cause of our economic woes, which is, of course, Washington, D.C. So they're talking about job creation, and I'm concerned that it will probably just be, the federal government is already hiring. And they're going to be hiring inspectors, and they're going to be hiring more people to fondle you at the airports, and they're going to call this job creation. But none of it creates a product that we can sell to other countries. And right now, anybody trying to start a business to sell products here in the United States, they're facing an uphill battle. Where are they going to find customers? Where are they going to find Americans with any money left in their pocket to buy anything at all? That's a problem. The problem is that the money has been taken out of the hands of the ordinary people and has been poured all over Wall Street. And as I've said before, trying to pick the economy up from the top by giving all the money to the people who are already rich is about as foolish as trying to move a house by picking it up by the roof. It's going to fall apart. You have to move a house by its foundation. You have to pick an economy up by its foundation. What is the foundation of our economy? It is the working class and middle class people who have borne the brunt of every reckless fiscal decision made by Washington, D.C. over the last 10 years. I'm not going to dump this all on Barack Obama. Much of this was created by George Bush and his cronies. But Barack Obama came into office promising us change. He has not delivered. He's continuing the same policies. Interestingly enough, Obama is out there basically taking a very soft tone with Wall Street and basically saying that, you know, these bankers who are getting these huge, huge bonuses, well, they deserve it because that's the free market system. And, you know, I'm not opposed to anybody getting wealthy. And to be very honest, I'm not opposed to anybody getting wealthy as long as we understand that there's got to be balance. And that for an economic system to be a system, the money has to be flowing at all levels of society, not just within that very tight circle around Wall Street. But the bottom line is, and the reason Obama's statements so angered so many people and proved that he really is kind of clueless about this, is that the very people he was talking about are paying themselves bonuses out of taxpayer funds. Their banks were propped up by bailout money. These are not successful bankers. Other than that, they have the political clout to force the U.S. government, to force you to pour trillions of dollars into the Wall Street bailout machine. And so the people who came out of those bailouts looking good, they're paying themselves huge bonuses. And Obama is basically saying, hey, that's the way the system works. If he's right, that's a good reason to start a revolution right there. So, you know, Obama just isn't getting it. He is not getting it. All right. We're going to turn to some other things here. I think I mentioned earlier in the show, I'm looking at this Toyota and Honda bashing. And we all want to drive safe cars. We really do. But I'm looking at the amount of coverage these issues are getting, and I don't remember the last time we saw an American car recall get this kind of saturation news coverage. There'd be an announcement. The owners of the cars would get the notice. They'd take it in, and it'd be one day in the news, and then it was gone. This is dragging on and on and on and on. And I think what's really going on here, this isn't about safety. It's about a PR campaign to bash imported cars to get Americans to buy American cars. One of the reasons that American cars aren't selling so well is because of the perceived quality and safety of Toyota and Honda. So now it's beginning to look like this isn't really about safety. It's a propaganda campaign. It's a sales campaign. The corporate media is selling you American cars. And I'm all for buying American. It's just that every time I buy American, I'm sorely, sorely disappointed here. All right, we're going to turn over here to the situation of Israel. As I mentioned at the top of the hour here, I am very concerned about all these American politicians who are out there saying things like we should let Israel set U.S. policy, that God will curse America if we dare oppose Israel. And as I mentioned earlier, we are now finding out from the testimony before the Chilcot inquiry in Great Britain that Israel was involved in every step of the way in the preparation and planning and lead-up and propaganda to selling the Iraq War to the United States and to Great Britain. And I think that's very, very alarming, because we are seeing Israel again taking the role of leader of encouraging us to go to war with Iran. Our Congress, in exchange for campaign donations, are renting our military. Our young men and our young women in uniform are being rented out to Israel to go stomp on people that Israel doesn't like. And they're trying to convince you that this is necessary because Iran is a really terrible place, and they're doing all kinds of icky-poo things, and it's just more propaganda. Iran has not attacked or invaded anybody in 200 years. That's not a claim that the United States or Israel can equal. So what we're getting today is apparently Israeli warplanes are again bombing southern Gaza, claiming that the more rockets were fired from Gaza into Israel, which of course hit empty lots and did absolutely no damage, as always seems to be the case. The Israeli warplanes targeted the Gaza airport. I don't think they're claiming the rockets came from that, but they're going in and they bombed the Gaza airport again. The Israeli army opened fire on Gazan farmers and international observers who were watching what was going on in that whole area. So it looks like Israel is trying to crank up Operation Cast Lead 2. Diplomats up in Lebanon are expressing concern that they see an Israeli attack with the goal of acquiring control of the Litani River as possibly imminent as well. Now, interestingly enough, over at UCI, there was a recent speech by I'm blanking on the guy's name, Israeli official. But anyway, the bottom line for the story here is that there was a videotape taken of a man wearing a yarmulke at UCI screaming at the students who were walking out of this speech, "You are failing your exams." Now, if this is just a guy who's there in the audience, that's one thing. But if it turns out, and they're trying to identify him from the videotape, if it turns out that this is a professor at UCI threatening the students with failing of their exams for having a different political opinion than he does, then that's another indication of the subversion, and that is the correct word, taking place within our midst. I remember when I was a kid, back in the 1950s, yes, I'm that old, when we were always hearing in our social studies classes about communist subversion, that the commies were worming their way into our government and they were going to turn us into the new Soviet Union, and we always had to be on the lookout for subversives this and subversives that. Well, turns out there has been subversion of the U.S. government. It just was not coming from the Soviet Union. We were looking in the wrong direction. The subversives are coming from Israel. They have bought and bribed our Congress, blackmailed the rest of them. I mean, look at the Israeli, the AIPAC spy case. The American involved in that, Larry Franklin, got 12 years in prison. The two Israelis who were his contacts and handlers skipped completely clean. I mean, that's got to tell you something is very, very much out of whack on that. So now we're getting the situation that pro-Israel instructors at UCI may be threatening students with their grades for daring to hold a different opinion of Israel than they are being told to have. And it's a very, very dangerous situation. Like I said, going into November, the most important thing that we can be doing is finding every American politician who's standing up there wrapped in the flag of Israel and say, okay, if you love Israel, move. America needs politicians who put America first, second, and third. That's the motto going into November. America needs politicians who put America first, second, and third. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone, I mean the panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. The phone lines are loading up here. We're going to go to Randy in Illinois. Aloha, Randy. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Mike, how's it going out there in Hawaii?
Well, pretty good. We got a nice, bright, sunshiny day here. Surf's up, dudes.
Okay. Hey, the other day, you heard of a guy named Wayne Matson?
Yes, I know of him, yes.
I don't remember whether it was on Russia Today or it was on Alex's show, but in reference to what you said about Toyota, Wayne Matson said it was economic warfare against Japan.
Yeah, that would make sense here because, do you remember several years ago, I'm trying to remember which network it is, so I'm not going to speculate, but there was a thing about trucks with side-mounted fuel tanks, and this TV show did an expose that showed that any little impact would blow the truck up and people would die, and it turned out they had rigged the truck with explosives because the producer of the segment was friends with a competing car manufacturer. They did another one where they were showing the Suzuki Samurai and how easy it would roll over. And they found out they were doctoring that one as well. So, yeah, I mean, a sticky gas pedal is a problem. But if you had that on an American car, you wouldn't get this kind of nonstop coverage. I mean, I'm looking at the corporate media feed here right now, and it's still the top story. Oh, my goodness, these cars are death traps. Stay away from them. Yeah, I find myself agreeing with Wayne Matson. This is probably economic warfare against Japan and North Korea. Well, not North Korea, South Korea, wherever else we get our import cars from.
Hey, one more question, Mike. When are you going to have your wife back on?
I keep asking her to come back on, but she's kind of shy, but I'll try and get her back on the show here now that we've got the camera feed and everything. But we will. We'll bring her back on because she's got a lot of stuff to talk about.
Okay, you have a good one, Mike.
All right, thanks an awful lot. We're going to switch over to Rick in Kansas. Aloha, Rick. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind? Okay, Rick has dropped, so we're going to switch over to Karen in Oregon. Aloha, Karen. Bring us up to date.
Hi. Well, we've got a conference call scheduled for tonight now, Mike. So many things are happening that it's hard to keep track of them all. I really have
Okay, now this is in regards to the national strike. For those listeners just tuning in, I didn't tease this one incorrectly. Karen is organizing a national strike to take place on Tax Day and 3 days thereafter. And so go ahead, Karen. Tell us about the conference call that's happening tonight.
Well, the reason, and thank you for going back and doing that, Mike, and thank you also for all the news. I don't know how you keep track of it all. My head is spinning just trying to
coffee.
Keep track of this.
Lots of coffee. Lots of Kona coffee.
We're having a call tonight it's an impromptu call, and from now on we're going to have two calls a week to help people touch base, to give them some incentives, to let them know how to get the word out, and also to raise awareness, and just in case of an internet shutdown or something unforeseen, that hopefully with the Olympics everything is fine. But if we need to get information out, these lines will be open every night in case of emergency. 712-775-7200 is this conference call phone line. That's 712-775-7200. 431-669-pound is the access code. 431-669-pound. So right now,
okay.
We're
now those are the numbers that I have at the top of my website right now. Correct?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay, all right. So they're posted there permanently in the announcement section so that people can plug into this whole situation. And, again, the reason for a national strike, it's not really going to do much of anything inside the United States except attract everybody's attention. But the message that we're sending is mostly to these foreign investors who have parked their money inside the United States on the promise that if they make money, they get to keep their profits, and if they lose money, we, the American people, will be compelled to make good on the losses, which is, of course, the essence of a fascistic economic state. And by pulling off a national strike and getting enough people involved in it, it's going to send the message that maybe we, the American people, who've never agreed to be the last court of assurance on foreign investment, that we might not be willing to go along with that plan at all.
Well, you know, I think it's also about empowering all the individuals out there who are sick and tired of being victims, who are wondering what they can do, and who want to be able to raise their voice in unison and say no. No to taxation without representation. No to stepping on my constitutional rights. No to all the infractions of this government gone wild who keep partying on our dime without inviting us. No more. And until we stand as one and collectively raise our voices, we're not going to be heard. I think that we can send as big a message as many people will join us. You know, Mike, we're not just in this alone. This is for every individual person. And I want to encourage them, too. If this talks to your heart or resonates with you, make your own YouTube version of why you're standing with us and not going about the business of your life as normal on that day. Join up. Sign the Articles of Freedom. You know, do something. Man, you talk about the bombing again in Gaza. The Israelis are just so out of control, and we allow it. Every day we go about doing
worse
our lives.
Worse than that, we pay for it. We're paying for it. We're paying for the bombs. We're paying for the white phosphorus. When Israel dropped white phosphorus all over Gaza, those shells were made in the United States, and we paid for them. And that's when I wrote the article, Killing the Family of Jesus. And it makes such a strong point. I mean, the Jerusalem Post just, they uncorked on us, and they smeared us and said, they're anti-Semites, and they're this, and all the rest of that stuff. Now, before we let you go, I need the name of the website one more time so that new people who are just coming into this issue will know where to go to get more information.
Okay, it's taxfree15.com. That's taxfree15.com. And thank you, Mike, for your support and for all you do for the rest of us. And I enjoy learning from you all the time.
Well, thank you very much. And, you know, please call in again and keep us up to date on the phone calls and the progress. And you're absolutely right. People need to start making YouTube videos about why they're going to join the national strike and get them out there so that this thing really goes viral. If we can really get a large section of the American people to simply sit down and relax for 4 days, it's going to attract attention. Remember, this is nonviolent. We're not committing any crimes. They can't come and shoot you for doing absolutely nothing. And yet, these kinds of national strikes were very effective in Gandhi getting rid of British rule in India. So this is a definite approach that we need to be looking at here. All right, Karen, anything else?
Well, they don't have to just do nothing on these days. They can organize within their communities. They can watch Freedom to Fascism. Again, we're working on getting some webinars to coincide with these days. They can sign the Articles of Freedom. They can stand for state sovereignty. They can get to know their sheriffs. They can do a lot of things to help unify their family and to bring together like-minded souls who have had it with government, Mike. It's too early to start shooting and too late to work within the government. We, the people,
well, I think Naomi Wolf, Naomi Wolf said it is time to start shooting them. We don't agree, though. We want to go for the national strike. And by the way, you know, we're starting to get people from up in Canada saying that they're going to go along with the strike at the same time. So this is already going across the border. You know, we've been hearing of the benefits of globalism from Wall Street and the United Nations. They may find a global revolt on their hands. If we all sit down and say, we're not going to be the bottom, we're not going to be the foundation on which your palaces are built anymore.
If that would be the greatest gift of all that humanity can give to ourselves. And I've had people say, oh, well, no, you'll never do this, and you got to go through all these coalitions and stuff. And there are people who will think that. But the seed that I want to plant in everyone's heart right now is you either will stand with us for freedom and unite, because if you do think about it, 300 million of us just here, and if you don't, if you sit back and snidely say, oh, nothing will happen and you can't do anything, then you're contributing to the government going about business as usual. If you stand
okay, we're almost
us,
to the end of the hour here, and I've got to get a comment in here. Anybody who says that nothing can happen and nothing can be done, take a look at Iceland. They kicked out their government for the reckless fiscal behavior that they were doing. Look at Greece right now. The entire country is shut down with a national strike. So
there
it can be done, and it can be effective. Don't tell me that nothing can be done. Gandhi succeeded. Iceland is going to repudiate their debt. Greece is shut down. France has been shut down by strikes many, many times. All it takes is the will of the people to exert themselves against a tyrannical government. Karen, thank you very much. We got to go here for news and commercials. Dalton, hang on to the phone, drink some coffee, walk around. We'll get to you right after the news break. This is the What Really Happened Radio Show. I'm your host, Mike Rivero, and we will be right back.
The Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to hour two of our show here. We're going to go right to the phones. We've got Dalton in Michigan. Aloha, Dalton. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Thanks, Mike. Hey, I wanted to let you know and everybody know that 2010 is the year of resistance. We're taking the Tea Party movement back from the neocons to think that they can penetrate it from within and give us Sarah Palin or some Karl Rove puppets that he wants to create. We have to gut this party from the inside out. And if we don't, these cycles running the White House are going to get us into World War III.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Good for you. I mean, the original Tea Party movement I thought was a really good idea. It's very clearly being hijacked. They're going to use it to basically get Ron Paul out of the race before he can make any progress whatsoever. So, take back the Tea Party or create a new party and give it a new name. But, yeah, the present Tea Party has been completely hijacked by the GOP. They know they've got a real chance at recapturing Congress this November, and they're trying to become populist now, even though, of course, it was the GOP that created this hideous economic mess that we're in right now. Not that Barack Obama has not improved it any. He hasn't. He promised us hope and change, and we're out of hope and living on change right now.
We need to put pressure on the people that are setting up these Tea Party meetings and let them know that they better not put these people in there, because we will create resistance that they won't be able to handle. And
maybe it's time to split off and start a new party. You know, if the branding has been hijacked, you could waste a lot of time and resources trying to get it back. Start a new movement. Go to Ron Paul, whether it's Campaign for Liberty or whatever, go to Ron Paul and say, Ron, what should we do here? What, we need to rebrand ourselves. They've stolen Tea Party from us, and, you know, we need a new branding going into the next election cycle.
We'll get it back. We need to make a stink about it. We need everyone to see it. That we're not going to take this anymore. We need to.
Well, I think everybody is already well aware that with Caribou Barbie being postured as the new head of the Tea Party, that it's been compromised and hijacked. Anyway, Dalton, thanks an awful lot, and good luck with getting that back. I need to move on to some other stories here. During the news break, I did go back and do a little research. The story about the truck, the exploding truck, was by NBC. They did a story on side-mounted fuel tanks on GM trucks. And the claim of the story was that when the truck was struck from the side, it would burst into flames. And they aired a video showing a vehicle colliding with the side fuel tank of a GM truck at low speed, and the truck exploded. It later turned out that NBC had hired special effects experts to wire the tank with explosives to explode on cue. And there was a lawsuit, was written up in Time. And so the bottom line is, when you see this much pressure, now I'm all for automotive safety, okay? And it appears that this gasoline pedal, which, by the way, my understanding is it was actually made in Canada, this is definitely an issue. But when you're seeing this much nonstop media coverage on an automotive recall, that's no longer public safety. That's a propaganda campaign. and it may be the start of an economic war with Japan. And, of course, economic wars have got this really ugly habit of turning into real wars. Now, speaking of real wars, and I know I got another caller on the line, but I want to get through this next story very quickly because, you know, the economic indicators are really very negative. In fact, we had a caller who called in about a story about something like 50 CEOs have resigned recently, and I didn't go with that because I can't confirm the claims in the story. But as I mentioned earlier, you know, in the last hour, the economy, the indicators are terrible. The states are going bankrupt. The people in Wall Street are putting money in their pocket. Barack Obama is trying to excuse their very piggish behavior. And there's no new money coming into the system. Trade deficits increasing. Everybody's going broke. We're seeing a new round of home foreclosures, commercial real estate foreclosures. The news is all bad. The news is all bad. So what do you do when the economic news is this bad? You start a war. And now we have Barack Obama has come out accusing Iran of attempting to build an atomic bomb. He has got no basis for making such a claim. But he is desperate to start a new global war to get out of this huge economic mess the government has created. And again, look back at history. There was an economic crash in 1904. A historian corrected me and said there was another one in 1907. The panic of 1907, which, by the way, led directly to the creation of the Federal Reserve. That was the excuse given why we needed to have a private central bank. And we didn't get out of that economic mess until we got into World War I. Crash of 1929 didn't get out of that till we got into World War II. Now we're in the crash of 2007, and look how hard they're trying to start a war. They're trying to start a war. And the bottom line here is Iran is playing by the rules. They are in compliance with the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. The United States government, in attempting to coerce Iran to surrender its legal right to have power stations and medical isotopes, means the United States is in defiance of the treaty, has violated the terms of the treaty. We're already in violation with Article 4. We're supposed to be in there helping them instead of sitting out here and glaring at them. Now, a lot of people have been talking about Iran's expected announcement tomorrow of something that would, you know, be a punch to the Western powers. And the speculation has been that, you know, Iran is going to say they've tested a nuclear device, or they're going to say they have a... Of course, they're not going to do that. They wouldn't do anything that provocative. What my estimation is, what my guess is, and it is a guess, is that Iran is basically going to come out and say that they have domestically developed an air defense system that is equal to the Russian S-300. So they not only have the Russian air defense system to protect their cities and nuclear facilities, they have now made one of their own that they are going to claim is equally good. And that's going to make an air attack much, much dicier for Israel to carry out, and from which to then sucker the United States into finishing the war for them. Now, the U.S., in response to the claim that Iran is only enriching uranium to 20%, has unveiled an offer to say, well, look, you don't need to make your own medical isotopes. Send us the nuclear material, and we will send you back the medical isotopes. And it sounds like a very reasonable deal, but there's kind of a hidden whammy in there, because we're talking not about uranium. We're talking about isotopes of molybdenum and technetium, and they have very short half-lives measured in days. And so when you calculate in the effects of the shipping time to get these isotopes back to Iran, and any delay simply degrades the amount of active material in the isotope, then Iran has to send something like four times as much uranium to the U.S. to get back the same amount of isotopes they would get if they simply manufactured them locally. So this is a real lose-lose deal from Iran's point of view, and I don't think they're going to go for it, no matter how much pressure is put on there. All right, we have got a caller on the line, John in Virginia. Aloha, John. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Well, thank you for welcoming me, Michael. I'm here in Charlottesville, Virginia. I have a blog where I write as Jack Rabbit.
And okay.
I'm between jobs, so I'm glad I use a pseudonym.
Join the club.
Benjamin Rush employed Thomas Paine as a writer for Just Cause, but he couldn't afford it. One thing, there's a couple of things, but, you know, the Toyota recall.
Yes.
I agree with you. I have never ever heard such a ridiculous, repeated flood of the AM lying media, such and such news flash, and then the trumpets come on about the Toyota recall and the gas pedal, and then they talked about the Prius didn't have it. It was ridiculous. And it was, to me, I agree with you, it was obviously a smear to try to get people to shift to American vehicles. Another thing, the general strike, I think, is a wonderful idea.
Mm-hmm.
I think the people who can do it must do it. There are a lot of people who cannot do it because they are facing such financial burdens right now that it might...
Yeah, we understand that. We also understand probably a lot of employers will say you're fired if you go on the national strike, and we're telling those people, you know, you do have to take care of yourself and your family first. And we're not expecting a 100% involvement in the national strike, but if we could even get 10 to 15% so that the economic effect is noticeable, that's going to send the message we want to send to all those foreign investors. Hang on to the phone. We're going to get back to you after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. Before we get back to John, though, somebody was just sent in an email here reminding me that Alex Jones had a guest. He said that what we need to counter the hijacking of the tea parties is a coffee party. And I hope Dalton from Michigan is still listening to this. And I think it's an excellent idea because it's actually quite symbolic. The reason coffee is so popular in the United States of America was as a protest against the tax on tea by King George III. After all those activists, patriots, terrorists from Britain's point of view, got dressed up as Indians and threw the tea into Boston Harbor. And one of my ancestors was part of that little action, I might add. Americans quit drinking tea. If we're not buying your tea, then you cannot collect the tax on the tea. And they switched to drinking coffee. And that's why America, by and large, is a coffee-drinking nation. And so I think this is an excellent idea. If we want to strike back at the hijacking of the tea parties, then we need a coffee party. And they're not going to be able to come back and insult us by saying,
well, they're a bunch of coffee baggers.
What the heck does that mean?
Well, I don't know, but it worked with the tea baggers.
Well, it's not going to work here. Okay, so that's a good idea. Dalton, I hope you're still listening. Yeah, we need a coffee party. We're going to reject the tea party just as we rejected the tea tax. We're going to reject the hijacking of a populist movement by Caribou Barbie. All right, we're going to get back to the phones. John, where did we leave off with you? We were talking of, what were we talking about?
I was probably babbling, and you were probably trying to keep me focused, but there's a couple of things. You know, mentioned in Tea Party, Sarah Palin somehow comes out on the top of the Tea Party. This is rather amusing, not really funny.
Well, Fox News sort of placed her there. You know, I mean, first she gets the thing at Fox News. She's going around. She gets a $100,000 speaking fee just to, you know, to write some words on her hand and say, yes, this is what I think. And she's declared de facto head of the Tea Party. I'm not sure, certainly from Dalton's phone call, that the Tea Partiers themselves actually go along with that. But that's what's been declared by fiat.
Right. And the funny thing is the Tea Party people, we're citizens coming together to talk,
mm-hmm.
and march. Maybe they didn't have a job. And in the end, somehow, they got hijacked. Len Beck being one of these people that somehow popped on the scene. And all of a sudden, he loved the Tea Party movement. But the one thing, and I know I repeat this a lot, but it's one of my things. People would just focus on certain things that bring us together, like the Bill of Rights. When you have somebody like Sarah Palin or somebody like Glenn Beck who are championing causes that are contrary to our Bill of Rights and our Constitution, we know immediately they have to be ejected from whatever movement it is.
They absolutely do. And for me, the telling thing about Sarah Palin, while she's out there supposedly leading the Tea Party, you know, against excess government taxation, at the same time she's saying that we need to go ahead and bomb Iran. I think the two positions are mutually exclusive. And basically says she's a very pretty face and pretty body that's hired to say certain things for the media to present to the rest of us. Frankly, I think it's a joke that the GOP is even considering running her in 2012. It's, you know, it's like she's being run to guarantee that Obama gets a second term.
Yeah, it's almost frightening in a way because there are so many great people out there, and for her to end up rising to the top, like, almost like she's the cream.
Well, I tend to have the cesspool model. She's just the biggest chunk.
Here's Michael. Here's a thing. It's a little bit different from that topic.
Okay.
The World Trade Center 7. I have a blog. I don't know if it's okay to mention on the radio.
Yeah, sure. Well, what's your view on World Trade Center 7?
Okay. I was digging around on the internet today. And, as usual. And I found these pictures posted by ABC News.
Remember yeah, they just came out. Yeah.
World Trade Center 7.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I found these pictures. I made a post. I put a couple of videos there so people could look at these pictures and ask themselves, wait a minute. If a fire, the whole story, most people know what the deal is. By the time that I posted it, sent it to what really happened, checked the story again and clicked on my own link, I found that the page was no longer available. Luckily, I had copied the images to my desktop.
Okay, now I know who you are. Yes, I did see those, and I unfortunately was distracted with other things and I couldn't get to them. But, you know, basically my position is, and this comes out of my background in film work, the few fires that we saw in World Trade Center 7 look like the kind that we do in the movies, where it's a fire just behind a window to make it look like a building's on fire, but there was never any hot core that was sufficient to bring down the building, certainly not one that was built way beyond fire and safety code because of all the federal offices in it.
Yeah. Okay, now, may I beat you up?
Well, it all depends on what subject.
Okay. I've seen some videos, and this is something that is I think is extremely pertinent to the truth movement, the Tea Party movement, this.
We're almost to the end of the segment. You got to get to the point.
Okay. Video evidence from 9/11 of fraud on television broadcast videos of
okay, I know exactly what you're talking about, and we've been over that many, many times, and this is stuff that has basically been planted by the government to keep people confused and to lay the formation of consensus. You know, the bottom line is that, you know, what happened that day happened, airplanes into the building. The question is, who was really behind it all? And we know that Dov Zakheim, the comptroller of the Pentagon, who was in charge there when $2.5 trillion went missing, his previous company, before he was appointed by Bush, manufactured remote control systems for passenger planes to deal with incapacitated flight crews or potential hijackings. So we know the technology was there. So, but I don't want to get into this idea of video fraud because it's too open to interpretation. And a lot of the videos that purport to show fraud are themselves fraudulent. You can see where they've been edited and post-processed, and they've been run through flame and all the rest of that stuff. So thank you very much for the phone call. We're going to let you go here. And we're coming down to the bottom of the half hour. As you probably heard already, former Congressman Charlie Wilson has died. You probably saw the movie Charlie Wilson's War, where Tom Hanks played Charlie Wilson. He was a colorful individual. There's no two questions about it. And he was very instrumental in getting the support for the Afghanistan resistance to the USSR. The one thing that movie did leave out, though, is that the USSR went into Afghanistan in response to their perceptions that the U.S. was already in there covertly, the way that we the U.S. tends to do, like in Pakistan right now. And that was the real reason for that ramp up of military power projection there. But he has passed away, and he was a very, very colorful individual. And before the commercial break, final note, Michelle Obama has apparently announced that obesity is a threat to national security. So I guess Blackwater's going to be out there machine gunning all the fatties. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Some have maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. One of our listeners sent in a news report clarifying the issue on the gas pedals on the Toyota. Toyota does buy a lot of parts from companies here in the North American continent, but apparently the gas pedals that actually have the problem have now been identified as being made by CTS Corp of Elkhart, Indiana. And so the Canadians are off the hook, and I apologize for unfairly smearing them in this deal, but the information's been a little bit fuzzy on the whole thing. But again, the problem with these gas pedals is an American problem, and yet the media is continuing to portray it as, oh, those bad Japanese cars. It isn't. The Japanese came over, and they tried to set up, you know, they tried to give American companies some business, and unfortunately, they kind of got messed up with that. Now, watching the corporate media news feed, it's turning into the Twilight Zone over there. It really is, because over the news break, I was watching this report where they're talking about how this snowstorm is breaking all previous records for snowfall in Washington, D.C., and Philadelphia, and Baltimore, and all these other cities. They're just getting pounded by the blizzard. The airports are closed and everything. And on the little crawl across the bottom of the screen, at the exact same moment, it was saying the White House had issued a statement saying that anybody who doubted global warming was based on fraudulent science and was a danger to the U.S. economy. Of course, I know why we're a danger to the U.S. economy. Barack Obama needs the carbon taxes to try and balance the budget. That's how desperate he is for the money. And so they're out there trying to say, you know, that global warming causes cold weather, which is nonsense. It's not science. It's a plot line from a science fiction movie. All right. Now, speaking of science fiction, I want to get on to this situation here regarding the trial of John Demjanjuk, which is taking place in Germany. And the reason it's in Germany is because Israel has a double jeopardy rule in their court system. Now, John Demjanjuk was extradited to Israel, tried, convicted, and sentenced to death for being Ivan the Terrible at the Treblinka concentration camp. And at the last second, an actual photograph of the real Ivan the Terrible was discovered in the files in Moscow, and the Israeli Supreme Court had to basically say, oops, our bad, we've got to let him go. Now, because Israel can never be seen to be wrong about anything regarding the Holocaust, they went after John Demjanjuk again, and they've got him on trial in Germany for murder, for being a guard at the Sobibor camp. The sole piece of physical evidence they have is an ID card for which there is no chain of custody. The prosecutors are saying they have no idea where the ID card came from. There are reasons to suspect it's a forgery. The SS seal is drawn in by hand instead of using a rubber stamp, which would have been the normal situation. But the bottom line is the case is rapidly falling apart. They're so desperate to convict him, because if it turns out that John Demjanjuk is again acquitted, that Israel did make a mistake, that they wrongly accused this man, not once but twice, then it's going to become socially acceptable to start saying, you know, what else about the Holocaust has been a mistake? We already know about the lampshade story. That was nonsense. The lampshades were made out of goatskin. We already know that the story about the soap made from human beings, that was another complete fiction. It was a low-fat, wartime industrial soap. And DNA tests have confirmed that it was actually pig fat, and very little of that as well. Now, Israeli and Polish archaeologists, and you know the Israelis want to find something there. They went to Sobibor, and they found no physical archaeological evidence to prove there were ever any gas chambers at Sobibor. They found no evidence to support the claim that 250,000 people were murdered there. In other words, there is no physical evidence of a crime. This is like the situation at Treblinka, where the ground-penetrating radar showed undisturbed soil, where it was claimed there were mass graves. This thing is kind of falling apart. They don't have a body. They don't have a murder weapon. All they've got is an ID card, and what makes this really absurd, Demjanjuk himself was a prisoner. He was captured by the Nazis and sent to the camp, and they said, you get to be a trustee. Which means the Nazis were still pointing guns at him, but he got to have a little more freedom in exchange for doing errands. And the entire case against him is because he was there at the camp, he de facto has to be part of the war crimes there. And here's the kicker. 30 years ago, the nation of Germany granted an unconditional pardon to all of the guards at all of the Nazi slave labor camps. So the guys who captured Demjanjuk and assigned him to do his work, they're already off scot-free. But they're out to convict Demjanjuk, not because he's a threat to anybody at his advanced age and medical condition, but because Israel has to be able to say, we were right about him all along. Otherwise, more and more people are going to start coming forward and say, you know, it's time that we took a look at this Holocaust story. Because Israel's entire justification for what it's doing in Palestine rests on that story of intentional extermination targeted solely on the Jewish people. I mean, just think about it for a minute. Think about it. Coming out of the end of World War II, where the rest of the world had sacrificed blood and treasure on the principle that Hitler did not have the right to march into somebody else's country and steal it for his own use. And yet, the founders of Israel were asking the world's permission to do exactly that to Palestine. They needed a propaganda tool powerful enough to convince the entire world that what Hitler could not be allowed to do to Poland, that the founders of Israel should be allowed to do to Palestine. And that was why there was so much propaganda effort put into this story. And now they're stuck with what seems to be an exaggerated story. Now, over at Auschwitz, it's already known the big crematorium that is shown to the tourists was actually built after the war by the Russians to deal with the typhus epidemic. The big plaque in front of Auschwitz has revised downward the total number of victims by 2.5 million. And that's victims of all causes, including the typhus epidemics, which were known to be slate wipers all across Germany at the end of the war. We are constantly being told, don't question, don't challenge, don't doubt, just believe as you are told to believe. Well, we were told to believe that there were torpedoes in the Gulf of Tonkin. That turned out to be a lie. We were told to believe in human-caused global warming. That turned out to be a lie. We were told to believe that swine flu was going to decimate us all unless we gave tons of money to the pharmaceutical companies. That turned out to be a lie. How many times do you have to be lied to before you realize you're being lied to? And we need to get back to knowing the truth. Americans are the most lied to people on the face of the earth. We are lied to in order to trick us into going along with various political agendas. Now, I am convinced that Demjanjuk is innocent of any wrongdoing justifying being taken from his home at his advanced age and subjected to this trial. I also have no doubt he's going to be convicted. Not because he's guilty, but because Israel demands it. like James Earl Ray, Bruno Richard Hauptmann, Leonard Peltier, his conviction is a foregone conclusion because the needs of the state require a human sacrifice to the orthodox account of history. And I would have thought, after all that they went through in World War II, that Germany would be the last place where we would see dictatorship and show trials. And yet, here we are again, all over again. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with the last segment of our show after these words from our sponsors.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back. Last segment of our show today here. Phone lines are still open, 866-582-9933. If you ever get a chance to go to ancient Egypt, I'd love to go there myself. I love antiquities and stuff like that. And you get to visit the temples at Abu Simbel and Luxor and Karnak, you will see the walls decorated with carvings by Ramses II. Ramses the Great, by his own admission, depicting his victory over the Hittites at the Battle of Kadesh. They're all over there, carvings. The Pharaoh drives his chariot over the Hittites, and the Pharaoh slays Hittite prisoners, and blah, blah, all over the place. There's only one problem. Ramses II didn't actually beat the Hittites at Kadesh. He almost lost his entire army, and he was forced to sign history's first known non-aggression treaty, which ended Egypt's expansion into the north. But Ramses, like any head of state, has an ego the size of his own nation. And rather than admit to his people that they'd kind of not done all that well, he basically went home, and knowing that the Egyptian people could not verify the facts for themselves, he lied to them. He lied and said, I am a great conquering hero, and I'm going to build all these temples to my own glory, and so forth, and blah, 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 blah. Eventually, word did get out, which is why the Canaanites revolted, and Egypt's influence in the Sinai came to an end. But the bottom line is, if you ever go there, and you see these stone carvings, there in stone, from thousands of years ago, is a lesson for us all. Leaders lie to their people. If there is one historical inevitability, it is that every government in history is lying to their people to trick them into war, into higher taxes, into whatever the current political agenda is. We always talk about mind control. Now, mind control is not some weird science fiction ray. All mind control is controlling what the brain thinks by controlling what the brain knows. That's the job of the media, or the propaganda ministry, or whatever you call it, or the stone carvings on the temple walls, to give you only that information which will lead you of your own free will to decide what the government wants you to decide. And so this gets back to this whole thing about the Holocaust and its shameless exploitation. At the end of World War II, Israel needed to find some device to convince the world that had just stopped Hitler from going into other people's countries and stealing them for his own use. Israel needed a device to convince the entire world that what Hitler could not be allowed to do, Israel should be allowed to do to Palestine. They needed a propaganda device, and there is the motive. And all these years later, Israel is so fanatical about protecting their revealed Orthodox account. They throw historians in jail. Ernst Zundel's been in prison for 7 years for asking a question. And again, the courts in Germany, and the nadir of that trial was the judge saying that any actual evidence regarding the authenticity of the Holocaust was not to be allowed in the court, because that was not the issue. Even if Ernst Zundel was correct that the Holocaust had been exaggerated for political gain, it was against the law to say so in Germany, and that's why Ernst Zundel is in jail. Now, truth needs no law to support it. Truth does not fear examination. Truth does not fear investigation. When Bob Ballard went down to the bottom of the ocean to examine the Titanic, and he found all this new information and detail about what happened, it didn't change the truthfulness of the sinking of the ship. It corrected some minor details. Throughout history, only lies and liars have resorted to the courts to enforce adherence to revealed dogma, whether it's Giordano Bruno being burnt at the stake for suggesting that other stars might have planets, Galileo being tortured into recanting that the Earth revolved around the sun, all the way up to David Irving and Ernst Zundel, and now John Demjanjuk, who are eyewitnesses to a version of history that is not the officially approved and sanctioned one. We have so many of our leaders right now that are trying to drag us out of the 21st century back to the 1950s and 1960s Cold War, in some cases back to the Middle Ages, in sanctioning the use of torture to extract confessions. The U.S. government has gone all the way back to before the Magna Carta. They're going back to the Middle Ages, where torture was acceptable. We're going backwards. We're supposed to be evolving forward. We're supposed to be evolving a new and better civilization, not going back to the Dark Ages. And yet that is what our government seems to be wanting to do. Don't think, don't analyze, don't question. Believe what you're told to believe. My personal philosophy is that beliefs are a very bad thing because they trick you into behaving and acting as if some things were true that turn out not to be. And we're bribed right from childhood to allow beliefs to control our brains. Believe in the rabbit, you get chocolate. Believe in the fat guy from the North Pole, and you get a bicycle. Believe in the tooth fairy, you get money. Believe, believe, believe. Don't think, don't question, don't analyze. Just believe what you're told. They get little kids into Sunday school or into social studies classes at kindergarten and first grade, and they indoctrinate with the beliefs that are completely unsupported. They're not facts, they're merely beliefs. And your personality grows up around those beliefs. That's why they call them core beliefs. And people become the thing that is believed in. And the giveaway is in the language. People go around saying, I am a Christian. I am a Muslim. I am a Republican. I am a Democrat. They become the thing that is believed in. Instead of saying, I support this particular platform. Or I am in agreement with this particular point of view. Their identity becomes subsumed into the belief structure. It takes a tremendous effort of will and personal courage to walk away from the beliefs around which your personality has grown. For a time, you may even feel like you're having an identity crisis, losing those core beliefs. But once you walk away from them, and you begin to understand what real freedom means when you are no longer slaved to beliefs. Because no chains of iron or steel ever held a human being tighter than the chains that are fashioned from the beliefs with which we are raised. So that those who control the beliefs can control us. Believe that our government is benevolent when history tells you that every other government is not. Believe that our leaders are fair and just despite the evidence right in front of your eyes. Believe that there is a loving and benevolent God even though his priests are molesting kids left and right. We need a world without belief. That will be the path to freedom for all humanity, when we can function without needing to rely on beliefs, when we can look at the world with open, honest eyes and see what the real world is and not be constantly told, oh, no, 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 forget what your eyes are telling you. Believe in human-caused global warming. Believe in the torpedoes at the Gulf of Tonkin. Believe in the crazed lone nut assassin. Believe in the revealed history of World War II. Like I said, we've been lied to so many times. The reason I keep coming back to ClimateGate is never in the history of the world has such a wide-ranging conspiracy among so many vested interests been so openly exposed for all to see. I got an email the other day saying, why are you working so hard to bring down the United States government? My reply is, the U.S. government's bringing itself down, and they're doing a really good job at it. All I'm doing is cheering them along. But I don't think any American wants to live with a government that goes on lying to them all the time. I don't think it was in the Constitution that the government had the right to lie to the American people. I think when the government lies to the American people, whether it's Saddam having nuclear bombs or Iran, whatever tomorrow's lies are going to be, when the government lies, it acts unconstitutionally. It ceases to be the legal government of this land. I won't live with a government that lies to us. I don't think you ought to. I don't think you want to. The Declaration of Independence says that governments are created deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. I do not consent to be lied to. I will have a truthful government, or I will have no government at all. And on that thought, we'll be back tomorrow at 5 p.m. Central here on the Genesis Communication Network. Until then, stay safe, stay skeptical, stay angry, get the facts, avoid beliefs and dogma, and aloha, America.